Okay. We are in Parshat Toldot, which is, thank you whoever gave me my water and my chumash, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We are in Parshat Toldot, which is on page 125. And we'll start with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher bachar banu mikol hamim V'natan lanu et torato Baruch atah Adonai Notein haTorah. So today we'd like to do our learning. It should be in the merit of a refuah shlema, a healing, complete healing for those who were injured in the terrorist attack in Israel the other day. And hopefully they will all have a recovery, a good recovery. I don't know how many of you saw this. I thought it was such a beautiful tribute to the Jewish people. One that doesn't get out so often is that the Haredi, the Orthodox, or as they always describe it in the newspaper, the fervently Orthodox, whatever that means, the Orthodox community in Har Nof, that a woman there arranged for free transportation for everybody, to whoever wanted to go, to encourage people to go to the funeral of the Druze police officer who was killed in the trying to defend the Jewish people.
Which and he was a Muslim. That's what they do. It was, you know, that's...
But the Druze are different.
Yeah, they can either be Muslim or Christian, but he put himself in front of the terrorists.
Yes.
I mean, it was like...
Amazing.
And so... a three-month-old baby.
Yeah.
He leaves behind a three-month-old baby.
And a wife, yeah.
And there are now, as I'm sure you've seen, that from that attack, there are four widows and 25 children who have been orphaned of their father. So, they killed them. Yeah, they killed them. Yeah, they killed them. And Israel's not giving their bodies back to the Palestinians, to the Arabs either, at this point. Which I think is a really good move. And
because don't they have an idea of bodies still?
I don't know. I don't know what's involved with anything. I just know they're not giving it back at this point to be a deterrent. I would just like to recite Psalm 20 for us, which is the psalm that we recite in times of difficulty and crisis, which this certainly is, when our hands are pretty much tied, except to raise our voices in prayer and in Torah study. So let me just share this and say it in Hebrew and then in English. Lamanatzeach mizmor leDavid ya'ancha Adonai biyom tzara yisagevna shem Elohei Yaakov yishlach ezrecha mikodesh umitzion yisadeka yiskor kol min chotecha ve'olatecha yidash nasela yiten lecha chilvavecha v'chol atzatecha yimalei Niranana bishuatecha ubishem Eloheinu nidgol yimale Adonai kol misholotecha ata yadati ki hoshi Adonai mishicho ya'anehu mishmei kadsho bigvurot yesha yimino ele barecha ve'ele vasusim v'anachnu b'shem Adonai Eloheinu nazkir hema karu v'nafalu v'anachnu kamnu v'nit odad Adonai hoshia hamelech ya'anehu biyom karenu. For the conductor of psalm by David, may Hashem answer you on the day of distress. May you be made impregnable by the name of the God of Jacob. May he dispatch your help from the sanctuary and from Zion support you. May he remember all your offerings and your burnt offerings. May he accept with favor, Selah. May he grant you as your heart desires, and every plan of yours may he fulfill. May we sing for joy at your salvation, and in the name of our God raise our banner. May Hashem fulfill all your requests. Now I know that Hashem has saved his anointed one. He will answer him from his sacred heaven with the omnipotent victories of his right arm, some with chariots and some with horses, but we in the name of Hashem our God call out. They dropped to their knees and fell, but we arose and were invigorated. Hashem save, may the king answer us on the day that we call. All of our requests should be fulfilled for the good of us, and when the requests are fulfilled for the good of the Jewish people, it's really for the good of the entire world. So Hashem should receive us. We are on Parshas Toldot, which is the story, the narrative about Isaac and Rebekah being barren and then giving birth to Jacob and Esau. Before we go into the whole discussion, because we're going to narrow in on the discussion that Rebecca has while she's pregnant, when she's trying to figure out why there's so much commotion going on beyond the normal trials and tribulations of carrying twins, which I wouldn't know about because I never had twins, but I guess it can be kind of intense. But it wasn't, she didn't go see her OBGYN. She went to go inquire of a prophet to find out what the answer was to the situation. So we're going to look at that. But before we do that, we want to understand a little bit more about the nature of the matriarchs, of what they come to do and what they come to add to the patriarchs. So if you think about it, we're just so used to saying, who are our patriarchs? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We say, Elohe Abraham, Elohe Yitzchak, Elohe Yaakov, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. If you think about it, why do we have to have three? If you ask the people in the United States, who is the father of our country? George Washington. It's like patriarch, the person who's the father. You don't name three generations. You might say, who were the other great presidents, the leaders, and people would add in Jefferson, Lincoln, Adams, and whoever else they would add in. But if you're talking about who's the source, you would usually name just one person. But in the Jewish people, it works differently because we're talking about the source of what. So it's like the source not just of the genealogy of who is going to be the Jewish people, it's that too, but we're talking about attributes and qualities and traits that get put together into what will be the Jewish people. And for that, we need three generations. So Abraham, we know from the study over the years that Abraham is associated with the spiritual quality of Chesed, of kindness. Okay, he is all about kindness. He's about being open. He's about saying yes, the totally inclusive. Yitzchak comes along, and when he's born, he represents the quality of gevura, of boundaries, discipline, restraint, the kind of the no, but in a good way no, the boundaries that need to be there, discipline. And then Yaakov comes along and represents Tiferet, which is the harmonizing of both. So you could say, why don't we just say that that Yaakov is our patriarch, that Jacob is the one who represents the synthesis of those two, so why don't we start with him? So in a way we do, because we're called B'nai Yisrael. We are called the children of Israel, and we are not called B'nai Avraham. So on one hand, it's a technical reality that the children of Avraham, he had two children. He had Yitzchak and Ishmael. So we're not the children only of Abraham, because one part of that went off track and created a whole new reality. We're not just the children of Yitzchak, because Yitzchak also had two children, Jacob and Esau. And Esau did not end up carrying forward the reality of the Jewish people. But Jacob does. But Jacob is the result of Abraham and Yitzchak coming together, and the matriarchs, Sarah and Rebecca, that came to create the reality called Jacob. So we have to include all of them, because there's it's like a spiritual formula that's being put together, starting with Abraham and Sarah and Yitzchak, Isaac and Rebecca, that will then result in Jacob. So the whole thing is necessary, which is why we call the whole thing our avot, our patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Any one of them by themselves doesn't give us the complete picture, and it's only by naming all three of them. So then the question is, okay, so then what are the matriarchs for? Are we the sidekicks? You know, like, yes, Abraham married Sarah, Yitzchak married Rebecca, Jacob then marries Rachel and Leah. So to focus first on the qualities that the patriarchs had, so we know that Abraham was chesed. But chesed by itself, without any kind of boundaries around it, can end up going very off track. We notice that all of the tests that Abraham went through were all tests to bring out a different dimension of him, and that was to put his chesed in the right place through the quality of gevura. Through the quality of gevura, another name for gevura is din, which means justice or judgment. And the person who helps him, his ezer kenegdo, his helper who is opposite him, is Sarah. Sarah is not, she is not the quality of chesed. She is the quality of din. She is the quality of gevura. So some people make a mistake when they want to try to have the women for the ushpizin at Sukkot. They want to have them be the guests. They put Sarah in and all of the matriarchs. But that's not what they are. They are the completers of bringing the the quality that is opposite of what their husband is, to bring the whole package to a place of completion. So Sara is the one who does that, and she brings that quality to Abraham and completes him. Susan. It's not. Because some people put them in as, like, instead of, they'll put in Chesed, and they'll say Abraham and Sarah. And then they'll do Yitzchak, they'll, for Gvura, they'll do Yitzchak and Rebecca. That's not what it is. Or they'll just make a whole thing just of women and just put them in, you know, plop them in those little circles, and it doesn't work because that's not who they are. It's not what they were for. So theirs was to bring that quality, that Ezer, a true Ezer Kenegdo, a helper opposite, in order to bring that level of completion. So Sara brings that, and it's Sara's quality. So this is also interesting. It's like, where does Yitzchak come from? So Yitzchak comes from the coming together of Abraham and Sarah. The part of him that is Abraham is that he is a male, and that he will be a father. So that's the Abraham part of him, but his spiritual quality is, whose quality does he inherit?
Sarah.
He inherits Sarah. Okay, so Yitzchak represents the spiritual quality of Sarah with the quality of Abraham being a male, and that becomes the next link. So Yitzchak really represents Sarah. Then when Yitzchak needs a wife, since he is in the form of Din, of justice in Gevura, what does he need to counterbalance him?
Chesed.
He needs Chesed. So when Eliezer goes to look for a wife for Yitzchak, he's not looking for, like, let me find someone who's in, who has the quality of Din and Gevura because they'll be a nice pair. It's like, whoa, whoa, that would be a big mistake. Okay, if you have that kind of combination, it's going to be too much. So Rebecca, the test for Rebecca, is really the quality of Avraham, going back to the Chesed. That's the counterbalance for Yitzchak. So then Yitzchak and Rivka, they come together, and that makes a completion. That is who she represents, as the completion of that pair to bring it into a place of balance. And then we're going to get to their children. So when you have twins, there is something different, interesting that's going to happen. So with this idea, and I didn't catch it all, this was a shiur that I listened to by Rabbi Sharkey, and it was in Hebrew, and I've never listened to him before. Did listen to it twice, but I won't say that I got 100% of it, but I'll just share what I got because I thought it was really fascinating. Just talking about this, just like kids inherit different things from, some things are on the Y chromosome and some things are on the X chromosome, and if it's whatever, it there's a spirit, there's a genetic component to our characteristics. It says that the boys inherit the spiritual qualities of the mother, and the girls inherit the spiritual qualities of the father. That's just like in a general, as a general thing. So when you have twins, so it says, like, how is it then that Rivka, who is this person of kindness, ends up with two children who couldn't be more different than each other? One is Yaakov, who really is coming from the place of Rivka's life as being a person of chesed and kindness. But she comes from a family, it says that she is the sister of Lavan, that she is Laban's sister, she's from that family. Her characteristics, she has a dual identity in her spiritual identity, what she came from and what she made herself into. Esav ends up coming to kind of claim the quality of where she came from, and Yaakov comes to claim the quality of what she made herself into. So that Rivka is the one who has the perspective on her children because they're following her spiritual DNA path. So it's interesting, which happens to be then that because Esav is going to carry this quality that is going to be on the side of justice, which we're going to look at, an interesting perspective, he actually has more in common with Yitzchak. You see that? If Yitzchak is the one who represents Gevura and Din, justice, there is an aspect of Esav that is really more like Yitzchak. And we see, who does it say that Isaac loves? Isaac loves Esau. And Rebekah loves Yaakov. And this isn't sentimental, oh, my little boy, I love you so much. This is like based on an affinity and a connection for who they are spiritually and what they can become and where what direction they're going into. So just a little bit of a background information as we go into looking at Yaakov and Esav. Now everyone's thinking about their families. Like, let's see, is my daughter really like my son? It's like it's so. Play with that in the broad base. There was more to that shear, more to that class than I got, but I just thought it was interesting enough to bring out because it'll make a difference when we look at what Rebecca's question is when she is struggling in her pregnancy. Marcia.
I just wanted to say that obviously beyond Sunday school, you know, when you learn whatever, then people say, like, how could a man just study Paul as, like, the same Torah and the same, you know, how could they? But look at how, like, what we came in knowing today, and then how you made it, like, infinitesimally bigger, you know, by talking about other aspects. It's just so
unbelievable. It is never ending.
Yes.
I mean, I do remember, just since you said that, I remember after the very first year I taught this class, which was a long, long, long time ago. And the second year someone said, so what are we going to study this year? And I said, we're going to do the Parsha. She goes, again? And I said, yes. I said, God willing, every word has 70 facets of understanding. And there's a lot of words in the Torah that we should be good for 120 years. So, thank you. Yeah, it's really fascinating. I have to thank my sister who lives in Israel, who listens to this this Rav Sharkey all the time, and she connected me to him.
I have a question. In English, it doesn't make sense. Maybe you can explain what it's saying in the Hebrew. Verse 21, Isaac entreated Hashem opposite his wife because she was barren. Hashem allowed himself to be entreated by him, and his wife Rebekah conceived.
Yes.
What is it?
They stood on opposite sides, like pillars. We discussed that actually in the women's class, the Jewish women's class at Yitzchak and Rebecca, where they were, it was a while back, right after the holidays. It means that they both prayed. That's why they were praying for a child, because Rebecca was barren, and Yitzchak didn't have any other wife. So Yitzchak represents the perfect person in that he had one wife, one name, and he lived in one place. Not like, I have this one and this one, and I will here and there. It's like, just be there. Okay? So, yes, and that it says, and Hashem allowed himself to be entreated by him, meaning Yitzchak, and his wife Rebecca conceived, that God listened more to the prayers of Yitzchak than to Rebecca. And it says, because the prayers of a righteous person who's the son of a righteous person is coming from a deeper place than a righteous person who's the daughter of a wicked person. So it says that not that anything, you know, nothing against Rivka, just like whose prayers have like kind of more turbocharge? Yeah. Yitzchak's did. But they were both important, and we're told that God made the matriarchs all barren so that he would hear their prayers. He said, because I made them rich and I made them beautiful, and if I didn't make them barren also, I'd never hear from them. So it's like, if you have everything, why would you call out to God for anything? It's like, I'm good, I've got everything, so just keep up the good work. So Rebecca was wonderful, but in the scheme of things, there's something to be said for somebody who's the righteous person, the child of a righteous person. Gabby.
So
the
father was between?
The father was Betuel, and Rivka's brother was Lavan.
No, I know the brother was wicked, but the
Betuel.
We heard something bad about himself?
I'm sorry?
Did we hear bad things about Betuel as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, but they were, it says, but Abraham's family had these great qualities, and they had levels of nevuah. They had levels of prophecy. So it wasn't, we don't paint people with just such a black and white. Bad, good. It's like, characteristics and qualities is one of the things. You know, Abraham wanted specifically Yitzchak to have a wife from his family. If it was so awful, he would have said, you know, maybe you just shouldn't get married. We'll just, you know, whatever. So that wasn't the case. So great qualities. And even we're going to see today in Esav that he also had great qualities that went off track, but he had great qualities nonetheless. But first, let's go to talk about where it describes the Rebecca's pregnancy on page 125, verse 22. And let's read that. Beth Ann, do you want to read the English there?
Sure. The children been agitated with the marriage. She said, if so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Hashem.
Okay. Again, if it was your standard pregnancy issue where you were having, your babies were really kicking and you didn't know what was going on, where would you go? You go to your doctor, and of those days you go to your midwife or somebody. You don't go and ask, inquire of Hashem. Okay, so she's going to get some sort of prophecy, some sort of spiritual insight into what's going on. And the way it describes them, v'yit rotsitsu, okay, that they were agitating like this with inside. If so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Hashem. So we're going to look at something that I had never, ever heard before. And we need to look at the Hebrew inside here. And would you go to the third line from the bottom? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We're going to look at the sixth and seventh word, kind of in the middle, where it says, Vatomer. And she said, Im kein, if so, Lama ze anochi. Okay, we're going to look at the word ze and anochi. So the word ze and anochi, because if she says, if so, why am I thus? So it's like, why am I thus what? Like, so the question is a little strange because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. She didn't say, why is this happening to me? She's saying, if so, if what so? If what is so? So if so, why am I thus? So in the Hebrew, it's going to be the words ze and anochi. So it happens to be that the words ze and anochi are two different names of God. Okay. The name of God that represents God's mastery over this world, Olam HaZeh, guess what name that is?
Zeh.
Zeh. Okay, this. We also recognize it in the Song of the Sea, where the Jewish people say, Zeh Eli V'Anvehu, this is my God and I will glorify him. When they say Zeh, who are they pointing to? Okay, Zeh what? Okay, Zez means is the name of God that has to do with mastery over this world as opposed to the world to come. The name Anochi is the name of God that's used to refer to God as ruler over the world to come. We see that in the very first word of the Ten Commandments. When God is introducing the Ten Commandments, Anochi, it is I who took you out. I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Didn't really have to say Anochi. It could have just said Ani Hashem. I am the God who took you out of the land of Egypt. But it says Anochi. It says the Anochi is the name of God's mastery over the world to come. And Zeh is the name of God over this world. So what is this understood to be? It's understood, and Rashi comes to talk about it, that she went to inquire, and let's see if it's in here. Okay, so that, let's see, does it say it? I wasn't looking in here before, about this world and the world to come. Okay, now, in some of the commentary, it describes that this fighting that was going on inside between Yaakov and Esav, that what was going on is that they were fighting over the two different worlds. They were fighting over the different worlds, and that you could say, we always say, Esav was interested in this world, Olam HaZeh, and Yaakov was interested in the more spiritual world to come. But if that was true, there would be no fight, right? You take this world, I'll take the world to come. No fight. It's a perfect match. Instead, it says that they were like this. And so Rivka's question is, why are they fighting if one is going to be concerned only with the world, this world, another one wants the world to come? Then what's the fight? So that's what she goes to inquire from a person of Hashem, a spiritual person who can understand these spiritual orientations of why is there a fight? What's going on with this? And then she is told, and she's given her prophecy. So now let's take a look at verse 23, and we'll see what is given. Bless you. There. Susan.
And Hashem said to her, two nations are in your home, two regimes from your hand. One shall be for you, and one shall be for the other. The light shall pass from one regime to the other, and the elders shall serve the
young. Okay. This seems like a pretty good answer, but the question is, what does it really mean? So first of all, one of the things we have to understand is it says, Vayomer Hashem La, which means to her. It doesn't just say Vayomer Hashem and God said. It says Lach, meaning to her, and that comes to exclude and not to him. Meaning, who is this prophecy for? Rivka only. She is not allowed to share what she learns with her husband Yitzchak. She can't go home and say, you will never guess what I heard today. The reason this pregnancy has been so crazy is we've got two nations in this womb. The older is going to serve the younger. So now you know, there would be like nothing left to say for the Parshas. Okay, if she could have said that, there would be nothing left to say. She was not allowed to say it. This was Hashem gives this prophecy to her and to her alone. And what? I'm sorry. And what does she say? And what is the message? It says Shnei, which means two. And then the word that has like the little circle next to it, the second line from the bottom, it's translated as nations. But it doesn't really say nations. It says giyim instead of goyim.
There's no vowels.
Vowels, actually, that's, in the Torah, there's no vowels anyway. Okay, so there's never any vowels or punctuation. The reason it's not punctuated is because if you see, there is a little word in the margin that says, pronounce it goyim. Even though you could not pronounce it goyim from just the letters if you just saw it, it would have to be giyim. So the double yuds there, it says, who are those double yuds? It says, it's talking about in the future that there would be representatives of two nations of this world to come and this world who would get along and that they would be together somehow. And it's talking about Yehuda Hanasi, who was who's called Rebbe, that he was the one who was the president of the head of the Sanhedrin. He's the one who codified the Mishnah. The Talmud is like Yehuda Hanasi. He was the political head of the Jewish people. So if you are the political head of the Jewish people, what kind of person are you? Are you a this world person or a world to come person? You what?
A little of both.
A little of both, right? If you're doing the Mishnah and you're the president, you are both. You have both, but you are almost say you're like almost, you're both.
You're whole.
You are complete. And who was his best friend in the world? It says Antonius. Antonius, who was a Greek and who was, Greek or Roman? Who was, let's see, I think it says in here, the next verse. Let me just see. No, it doesn't say. That he, the cosmic forces. Okay, no, it doesn't say. Okay, that he was, Antonius was not Jewish. He's a descendant of Esav, whereas Yehuda Hanasi is a descendant of Yaakov. But he was a philosopher, even though he was also a head, a government head. But he was a philosopher, and they were like, they said they were a chavruta together. They studied Torah together. You have this Roman, and then you have this Jew, who's head of the Jewish people, and they have a chavruta together. So first of all, you think like, wow, that's a nice image. Like, you know, they're having a conversation together. They're learning Torah together, but both from a different perspective. One from this world perspective, and one from the world to come perspective. But that they were the dearest friends. And that they were very wealthy and everything. So they had both this world blessing and the world to come blessing. It's like, wow, that's the future. So what Rebecca was really being shown is, in the future, this is going to work out really well. Because these two opposite forces, which seemed like they could not ever get along, were both wants both this world and the world to come and to lay claim to it. It can work. And it will work. And that will be the future. And Yehuda Hanasi and Antonius, they were examples of that, that it can work. The other idea is the idea of a chavrusa, comes from the word chibur, which means that it's possible to connect both of those, that they aren't worlds that we're really looking to divide and to separate. We get another gist of this, is when Jacob later has his dream, what's the image that we all know from Jacob's dream? The ladder. And what does the ladder symbolize?
The connection.
The connection. And in fact, let's take a look, hold this place, and then let's just go to Jacob's dream. Okay, where is that? sorry, my fingers are cold, so they're not moving very fast. We're getting there. Okay. Page 145, Parsha Vayetze. And in verse 12, let's just take a look at that. Nancy, do you want to read that for us? Page 145, verse 12. Okay, so I notice it keeps saying, behold. It's like, wow. It's like, I mean, if you say any ladder, that's what a ladder does. A ladder is, you know, you put it up against the roof, the top of the roof, the bottom. Like, what? Why would you get so excited about that? The excitement was over the revelation of the connection between that which is in the physical world and that which is in the spiritual world. And when Yaakov wakes up from his dream, he says on page 147, and he says in verse 16, let's read that. And I'm so sorry, I just forgot your name.
Oh, it's Mo.
Would you like to read for us verse 16?
Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely Hashem is present in this place, and I did not know.
Okay. And in the Hebrew, we're going to see some familiar words. It's going to say, Vayikatz Yaakov, Mishnato, he woke up from his sleep, Vayomer, Achein. Therefore, Yesh Hashem Bamakom, and God is in this place, Hazeh Va'anochi, this world and the world to come, Va'anochi Lo Yadati, and I didn't know. I didn't know that it could be combined. I didn't know that there was going to be a connection. I didn't know that now I was going to be the person who was going to represent the ability to connect this world and the world to come. That we are not, like some people think, Judaism is just about this world. It's like, it's not just about this world. Other religions have, it's only in the world to come. You know, that's where you're in, that's where everything is great and you'll be with whoever, doing whatever. It's like, we don't believe that either. It's like, we have the angels going up and down, back and forth. This is all connected. And so we see Yaakov is actually echoing the words that were told, that his mother said back when he was, when she was pregnant with him, of this Zeh in Anochi, this world and the world to come. And it's all being brought together with this pregnancy of those two people as twins.
When you say the world to come, are you referring after death?
Yes.
I studied about this much of Kabbalah. I think I've always been aware that there's another world in this world. This has nothing to do with the world to come.
It's actually both. So it says that we live with a... Since we live in time, this is actually a blow-your-mind kind of perspective. I'm saying these words and I can't really explain it. Because we live in time, our perspective of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba is in chronology. Now is Olam Hazeh, later is Olam Haba. But the reality is it exists simultaneously. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba exist simultaneously so that we are creating simultaneously. What we are creating in Olam Hazeh is a creation in Olam Haba at the same time. It's not like you'll get your just desserts at the end. It's, we are living in that dimension is accessible all the time, which is another dimension of Yaakov seeing this ladder. It wasn't like, and in the future, there's not a sign at the top of the ladder, in the future you will be here. It's like, this is a dynamic relationship all the time. So we're told we're supposed to live with an Olam Haba perspective. Which, as we are living in Olam Hazeh, this world, and what we're going about, we're supposed to understand the dimension of Olam Haba that is being, that we are simultaneously living in, which we will experience more directly after we die. That's where the after we die comes into it, is because we won't be able to experience it as fully until then, because we are now in this physical world and our, you know, our feet are on the ground. But our feet are on the ground and our heads are supposed to be in Olam Haba. So again, we use metaphors of time and distance in order to explain dimensions that are higher versus lower. Does that make some sense?
Excellent.
Okay. Okay, so that's So we're supposed to have an Olam Haba perspective. So when we, if you ever study Masilat Yesharim, the path of the just, it talks about how to live your life in this world with an Olam Haba perspective every moment. Not just like, you know, how some people feel about their, I always say retirement plans because that's what my husband does. Their retirement plans, like, oh, well, I'm too young to think about that. I'll worry about that later. This is your Olam Haba is a dimension of reality that we have access to, but not as completely as we will later. Okay, great question. Thank you. All right, so the question is, we do want both. So that's the fight. Esav, though, is primarily focused on this world. Yaakov, the one who's going to be born, is going to be sitting in the tents. He's mostly focused on a dominant Olam Haba with a path of Olam Hazeh, because this world is the path to Olam Haba. You can't bypass it. And Esav is this world, but he wants reward. He wants to create the Olam Haba also. But they're going to have two different perspectives, and that's going to determine how this works out. And we see why Esav actually is going to go into, is going to have a struggle. So when we see next, we want to look at Esav. So we know that the word Esav, actually we'll turn to page 127, verses 24 and 25. And Chella, would you like to read that, please?
When her charms of bear grew full, then behold, there were twins in her womb. The first one emerged red, entirely like a hairy mantle. So they named him Esav. After that, his brother emerged with his hand grasping onto the heel of Esav. So he called his name Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them.
Okay, great. So now, hairy. He was hairy all over. All over his body. Can you imagine giving birth to, like, okay, it's like my someone only your mother could love, I guess. But so he was red and he was hairy and he looked like a little man. So Esav, which means made. He was a made man. He was complete. So here's something really interesting that I also never knew. The word Esav, the name Esav, has the same gematria, the same numerical equivalent as the word shalom. Of peace. But, and you're like, whoa, that doesn't seem like a match. But remember what shalom really means. Shalom really means complete, not lacking anything and everything from a dimension of wholeness. Okay, it says he was made, that's how he came out, and that was his orientation, and that was his spiritual orientation too. His philosophy was one of wholeness. You could say he was kind of like an all or nothing person. And we're going to see where that's going to come back to haunt him, unfortunately. And let's see, when he was born, so we know that Jacob was the opposite kind of a person. Not only was he not hairy, that even when he grew up, that it says that he was smooth-skinned, which is why when Rebecca's going to dress him up to go in and get the blessing, she has to put some fur on his hands. And in order to make him feel more like Esav, because he was a smooth-skinned man. So let's also just take a look at this, a smooth-skinned man. Actually, we won't look at this. So we'll just say that he was smooth-skinned. So smooth-skinned, it's kind of like when you think of a person of maturity. It's like, you know, boys are always looking, waiting to see, you know, when they're going to get their beard. You know, they're like, they want to start shaving. I don't know if boys still want to do that or not, but the signs of maturity is that you have hair, okay? Yaakov didn't, okay? So in some way, you could say, I wouldn't say this, but this rabbi said, Yaakov was kind of looked like a wuss, okay? He was sitting in the tents, he was kind of slightly built, and he was, you know, fair skin, fair, you know, he just doesn't look like he was going to really necessarily accomplish something. And Esav looked like he was going to be a man. So what was it that Yitzchak loved about him? Because it says that Isaac loved Esau. So on page 127, where it says on verse 28, Isaac loved Esau, for game was in his mouth, which is also kind of a weird thing. You just think of this man like with, you know, like a thing of, like, I don't know, venison, like, hanging out of his mouth. It sounds terrible. But Rebecca loved Jacob. So we have to understand what was it The lads grew up, and Esau became one who knows hunting, a man of the field. Remember that Yitzhak, just like Avraham, had been given a promise that the Jewish people were going to become a goy gadol, a great nation. We were going to become a people, and we're going to inherit the land of Israel. If you're looking for who would be the leader of this group, who would be able to lead a people and navigate all the things that are necessary to have a land, to have a people, who is it you think is going to be your best bet?
Esau.
It's like, he's the man of the field. He's the man, people say, he's got street smarts. He knows, like, how to do things. He's the person who's going to have the different powers and the different intellect and the ability to really make this people a happening thing. Yaakov is all well and good, and we always need the people who are the scholars, and we always need the people who are focused on the spiritual dimension. But it can't be that alone. In fact, you're going to really need somebody who's going to be able to be a powerhouse, who's going to be that man who's red. Red is associated with blood. With blood is a sign, you could say blood is a sign of all sorts of things, but it's primarily a sign of life. Okay, that he was a vigorous person. He was a strong person. He was a person who had a sense of mastery of the world. Yitzhak is like, this is the person who is going to really make our people, help our people achieve something. That was his inclination towards Esau. When it says Isaac loved Esau, the word love in Hebrew, ahava, comes from the word hav, which means to give. Okay. He gave Esau his attention because he saw him as being the one who was going to really carry the mantle of leadership, that there was going to be, it was going to be the tribes from Esau and the tribes from Yaakov, and that together was going to make B'nai Israel. That was going to create the Jewish people. What Isaac didn't know is it wasn't going to work like that, because Esau, this perspective that he has, ends up getting him in trouble. So what happens? It says, so in the Midrash, it talks about Esau, that he had a way of fooling his father. He fooled his father about his piousness, because he couldn't be just a man of the field. He had to also have the dimension of spirituality, otherwise it's an incomplete package. And that he fooled his father. But this rabbi just cast Esau in such a different light. It was really, I thought it was really beautiful. It said, so according to the Midrash, it says that Esau asked his father, how do you tithe salt and how do you tithe straw? Okay.
Tithe.
The, how do you give the 10%? How do you tithe, can you tithe, how do you tithe salt and how do you tithe straw? So, oh yeah, tithing comes from the Torah. Okay, so the tithing comes from the Torah. Yeah, no, tithing comes from the Torah. So, what do we know is, so you could say, is that a good question? If you ask your rabbi that question, is that a good question or is that a bad question? Okay, it's a sign of something. Okay, so he said, I used to think, like, those are stupid questions. Why? Because we don't tithe salt and we don't tithe straw. We tithe things that grow, produce, animals, things that are alive. So what's Esau's question? He's asking a question, because what is the whole nature of tithing? The nature of tithing is that out of everything that's in this world, Olam Hazeh, we take a portion of it, 10%, and we give it and elevate it, and we say that there is a kedusha, there is a sanctity in it, and so it's tithed. So his question is, how do we tithe things that are not in the category of things that are alive, such as animals or plants? How do we tithe things that are inanimate, like salt, or things that are considered the throwaway, like the straw? You know, if you have the separating of the chaff from the grain, well, what do you do with the chaff? That doesn't have a place of holiness. So Yitzhak sees these questions as wonderful questions. Because what is Esau really saying is, in this world, it needs to be possible to reveal the sanctity in everything, not just some things. And when Isaac tells him, We don't tithe those things. For Esav, who is the all-or-nothing person, is, well, if we can't tithe that, then I tithe nothing. It's like, if it can't be everything, it'll be nothing. So his perspective of this all-or-nothing framework gets him into trouble, because then he's like, I want nothing to do with any of it. I don't want it. And that's, in fact, what he says when we see, and I have red lentil soup on my menu for this Shabbos, is that he ends up selling his birthright. It's like, I don't want it. So if you see, going down, verse 29, let's take a look at that. Got to be the English of that, of Jacob simmered a stew.
Jacob simmered a stew, and he came in from the field, and he was exhausted. Esau said to Jacob, pour into me now some of that very red stuff, for I'm exhausted. He therefore called his name Edom. Jacob said, sell as this day your birthright to me. And Esau said, look, I'm going to die, so what use to me is the birthright? Jacob said, great to me this day, he swore to him, he saw his name. Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, ate and drank, but up and left. Thus, Esau's
Esau was like, I'm not participating in this. And his attitude is, it says he came in from the field. He came in from his, it says he had been involved in every kind of major sin a person could be involved in. And it lists five of, from the sex, murder, stealing, everything, is that he goes into a place of, I'm done with morality. I'm done with everything having to do with any kind of olam haba. And in fact, kind of the Nietzsche approach of, you know, God is dead. You know, this can't be right. I'm not participating. And in fact, he says, the last line where it says, look, I am going to die. What does that mean, I'm going to die? It's like, yes, you're going to die. So there's all sorts of understandings. He thought he was going to die because he knew he wasn't worthy to officiate in what was considered the spiritual ritual of the firstborn, because until the time that we had the Levi'im, the tribe of Levi, it was the firstborn who was the spiritual person of the family. They were the ones who were in charge of all the spiritual work, ritual. But look at the language that he uses. On the bottom it says, Vayomer Esav, and Esav says, Hine, behold, Anochi Holech Lamut. Anochi, the name of God that represents the world to come, is going to die. It's like, God is dead. I'm not interested in any of this. What use is my birthright to me? I'm not interested in a spiritual birthright. I'm not participating in anything. He had reached a place which is called this exhaustion. It says his exhaustion was the exhaustion you find when you are in the world and you can't have it be the way you want it to be. It wasn't like, oh, he was out working in the field plowing the back 40. It was like he was out in the field, out in the world, and he was exhausted because it couldn't be the way he wanted it to be. And so he's done with the whole thing. I don't want it. You can have it. Just pour in me some of that red stuff. And he just enters into a olam hazeh world that is devoid of spirituality. And when this world is devoid of spirituality, it's just eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we die. It's like, it doesn't make a difference. The whole future thing, that olam haba thing, doesn't exist. I'm not interested in it. You can have my birthright. I don't want it.
Do you find the original word where it says, but Rebecca loved Jacob? Because could that have changed his direction? Because that the implication of that is, not she loved him a little, she didn't love Esau. And when you grow up, and it is the mother
who directs.
Sometimes you are a product.
Yes.
Of how your parents are treating you.
Well, we understand that she treated him well, and also just to say that the English is not correct. The Hebrew is va, and, not but. And that verse that says, Isaac loved Esau, for game was in his mouth.
But it's, and Rebecca
loved Jacob.
The implication is they each have favorites. Yeah.
But it wasn't a favorite. So this was what had to be made very clear. This was not a sentimental favorite. This wasn't, oh, this is my favorite child. This was, and again, what we said, love. was to give. So why did she love Jacob? Why did she want to give to him? Is that Yitzhak saw Jacob as kind of like, you know, he's in the think tank, he's in the tents, he's, you know, he's not out in the world, he is not going to be the leader of this people. But what did Rebecca have?
She has a prophecy.
And what was her prophecy, just going back to that? It said, the elder will serve the younger. So she's saying, he may not look like much now, but he is actually going to be the one to grow up. He is actually going to be the leader. So if anyone needs to be nurtured in leadership, it's not about, I love you. It's about what you give to someone that is appropriate for what their mission is. We'll see the same thing about Yaakov loved Yosef. Okay, it doesn't mean he didn't love his other brothers. It meant that he gave more to Yosef because Yosef, he saw, was going to have a mission that was totally different than the rest of his brothers. And in fact, it's the ideal parenthood. You want the parents to give to a child according to what their needs are. Isaac saw that Esau, because he certainly appeared to be the one who was going to really hold the people. And we see this quality later, because who looked exactly like Esau? King David. And when Shmuel, when Samuel came to anoint him, he was a little freaked out because he looked like Esau. But what in fact was David? He was the king through the lines of which we have Mashiach, the Redeemer, and he was the one, he was the spiritual and the physical leader of the Jewish people. We always think of him as King David, like, you know, sitting on his throne, but he made halakhic decisions. He was a Torah scholar. He wrote all the Psalms. He prayed. I mean, he did the whole gamut, and he looked just like Esau. He was what Esau could have been, but he never became. Rivka sees that Yaakov is the one that he may not look like much now. It's like looking at, you know, when you see in a yearbook, somebody that you see like a sport, I don't know, somebody, and they say, and then they show the yearbook, and he's sitting there like, you know, looking like, really? I didn't think that was going to be him. So in a way, and we have to, I have to listen to this Rabbi Shear to see what he goes on with, but in the dressing up of Yaakov as Esau, there are so many layers of things going on. It is also a message to Yitzchak is, he looks like this now, but you don't really know what he's going to become, because he is actually going to become what you are envisioning for Esau to become. I see what's going on with my children, and Yaakov is going to be the one. And it was a prophecy from Hashem that it was going to be that way. It's still hard. Hold on 1 second. Yes.
I just wanted to say, that's one of the things we have to remember, is that while she's doing all of this, she can't say.
She can't say anything.
I know what you're, you know, I know it. Isaac, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But she has to do this without saying anything of what has been told her.
Right.
Which
and
makes it even more.
It makes it harder.
Incredible that she was able to do this.
She's able to do it. And you know, and there is suffering that comes from this, in that after this happens, then Rivka never sees Yaakov again, you know, the rest of her life. So, you know, but they have to say, why did it have to be? Why couldn't it, wouldn't it have been so much easier and so much more straightforward if Hashem would have just said to Rivka, here's this prophecy for you, and keep it to yourself for now, but if things get tough and you see things going off in the wrong direction, tell Isaac that he's making a mistake. So she couldn't tell him that he was making a mistake. She had to show him that he was making a mistake. And she shows him that he's making a mistake by putting Yaakov in the trappings, literally, of Esau, so that he gets the blessing that he needs in order to be successful. Not taking away from the fact that this is a very difficult parsha. It's a difficult parsha.
Excuse Why me. Does he need the blessing? I mean, Hashem, this is already prophesied. What is so important?
Then? Great question. What does he need the blessing for anyway? So the blessing is just like Abraham blesses Yitzchak, then Yitzchak blesses his children. The blessing of, just like, why do we bless our children? It carries tremendous weight, and it creates a reality. The blessing that Yitzchak is going to give Yaakov, which includes, and your brother will serve you, that's
giving it to the, I mean, he's being tricked.
Except he's not really. So that's kind of in the end. Because if the blessing would have been gotten through illegitimate means, We have a halacha in Jewish law. If you contract, if you conduct business and you conducted it unethically, does the deal stand?
No.
No. And what does Yitzchak specifically say after he realizes that he was, quote, tricked, is that he says to him, hold on, let's go to where he says it, because it's very, it's not like a, it's not a midrash. Okay, so it says here, it says the he will remain blessed. On page 141. Well, yeah, now he wants a blessing after it's over. Page 137?
No, page 37.
Verse 37. Okay, I'm looking there, but there's another place where he says he shall remain blessed. But I don't see that. I don't see it. Okay, it is here someplace, but here it's verse. Thank you.
Yeah, it is 33. It's verse 33.
Okay. First, thank you very much, Linda. Do you want to read that for us? Verse 33.
Then Isaac trembled in very great perplexity and said, who, where is the one who hunted game? Brought it to me, and I partook of all when you had not come. And I blessed him. Indeed, he shall remain blessed.
He remains blessed. Okay. Otherwise, if it was going to be, so there's a question about how confused Yitzhak really was. Because he keeps saying, is it Yitzchak, is it Yaakov, is it Esav, come let me smell you, and let me touch you. And after he smells him, and he smells like this is the person who's the right person, says that this is the one, when it says the fragrance of the field which Hashem has blessed, it's only after he smells that smell on him, which is considered a complete confirmation of this is the person who is supposed to receive this blessing, he says this is the person that remains blessed. And, just so we don't feel too terrible, Esav gets a blessing. He also gets a blessing. But it's a little unusual that Esav only wants to have these blessings after Yaakov already got it. So he wanted a blessing, but he didn't want the birthright. So it's a little challenging if you want part of the package. Like, I want the blessing, but I don't want the responsibility. I want the pay, but I don't want the job. So what does that mean exactly? That's a little questionable. So, but Esav was definitely emotional about it, and he wanted something, and his father does bless him, because both of they're his children. So Esav gets a blessing, Yaakov gets a blessing, and if we look deeply at the blessings, which will be for another year, we'll see that the blessings are actually very similar, and they both get exactly what they need, because in the end, Hashem is like orchestrating everything, and they all get exactly what they need. But things went in such a twisted way, but not originally because Esav was a bad person. Esav was born with tremendous qualities, and he had a perspective. He actually had a perspective that was very similar to Yitzchak, that he was for justice, and his feeling of, if everything can't be put in the realm of Kedusha, of holiness, then nothing can. We can't have some yes and some no. That perspective has a point. It does have a point. It's just he went in the wrong direction with it, and he lands on the side of evil. King David, with the exact same qualities, ends up on the side of good, and that becomes the person who we look to, and he really is, was considered the very powerful person through whom the Redeemer will come. So, unfortunately, we have to conclude now. I'm happy to stay to answer questions, but I don't want anyone to feel it because I know some people need to go. You should have a wonderful Shabbos and to think about this Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. We're meant to be all live like twins, and to have that be connected like the ladder that Jacob sees later is Zeh and Anochi belong together. Our lives are, we're on a dual track. We are on Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba track, and there is a constant connection between the two. It's not just we'll worry about Olam Haba when we get there. We're there now. We just don't have total access to it. Have a wonderful Shabbos.